irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Before we hop into today's show, let's take a moment to thank our sponsors who make today's show possible, the lovely folks over at Markham Search, LLC. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting services. Building on Markham Group's personalized approach to accounting and financial services, the members of Markham Search's team have their clients' best interests in mind. So thank you so much to our lovely sponsors over at Markham Search, and thank you so much to John Livesay for joining us today. So John is on the show today and is known as the Pitch Whisperer, and is also known as a sales keynote speaker, where he helps salespeople become magnetic storytellers with the ability to make irresistible offers to their ideal clients. John has captivated audiences in settings ranging from Anthem Insurance to Coca-Cola's CMO Summit. He is also the author of The Successful Pitch, Conversations Ongoing from Invisible to Investable, and is the host of his own podcast called The Successful Pitch, which has been heard in over 60 countries around the world. John has appeared on television as an expert on how to ask for what you want and get a yes. During a 20-year career in media sales with Condé Nast, John worked across all 22 brands in their corporate division and was the recipient of Salesperson of the Year honors. John currently lives in LA with his two King Charles Spaniels, who welcome him home after he returns from his keynote talks, reminding him of the importance of belly rubs. Thanks so much for joining us today, John.
Jennifer, I'm glad to be with you.
Yeah, it's so wonderful. So this is such an interesting kind of span of your career. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about how it was you came to work with Condé Nast and then to become a professional keynote speaker?
Well, I majored in advertising when I went to college, and I always thought that Darren Stevens from Bewitched had a really cool job of selling the concepts to people. And I always loved the concept of what motivates people to take action, and that advertising really is the combination of show business and business together to be inspiring and entertaining, whether it's a jingle in a commercial or an ad in a newspaper or magazine that has to pull you in enough to make you want to be motivated to live that lifestyle or buy that car or wear that outfit. So for me, getting into media sales was a very logical progression. One of my personal passions is photography, so every month having a new issue of things to show and bring to life was fun. And one of my jobs was to explain the differences between Vogue and Vanity Fair and GQ to advertisers, that each magazine has its own voice and each brand has its own voice. And that really is where I learned the concept of storytelling to inspire and entertain and inform people. And that each brand has a voice that needs to resonate with a particular audience that may or may not match what that particular car company is launching. So that really is what spurred me into loving doing that for so many years. And then I just decided to solve a problem that I kept seeing, which was a lot of people don't really know how to tell stories. And when they come in to pitch anything to get hired or to get a new client or even to get a startup funded, they confuse people and stumble around and bore them. And I just thought, I can help people go from stumbling to soaring and boring to inspiring just through teaching people how to become storytellers.
Yeah, and I love this concept of going from being invisible to investable, or to being irresistible, I think is another thing we talked about offline beforehand. Can you tell me a little bit about what you mean by that? How does somebody go from being invisible to either investable or irresistible?
Well, it's very similar to what you do when you're trying to get a new client or if you're interviewing to get a job. I mean, at one point, they've never heard of you if you're trying to interview. If you're a big brand, sometimes your ideal clients haven't heard of you. So you're invisible. It's much like dating sometimes. You see somebody at a party and you might as well be invisible. They don't know you're in the room. And then you move up the ladder to insignificant. Or maybe they see you and you know, I don't know what's worse in dating.
Invisible or insignificant.
Yeah. You know, maybe you say, oh, I sell life insurance. Well, that's insignificant to me because I don't need it or want it. And then you finally get up the rung to where you're interesting. Maybe you say something that's clever or witty or something and says, oh, I'm interested. I'm not going out with you yet, but I'm at least interested to hear a little more about what you have to say. And the same thing is true in the sales process or the interview process, or they're interested enough to invite you to come have a face-to-face interview. And then you're in that space where you have to distinguish yourself. And the next rung up is where you get someone intrigued enough to say, huh, tell me more about that. Let's say you paint a picture of what it would like to be going on a date with you, or you paint a picture of what you would do the first 90 days if you were to get this job. And they get intrigued enough. And then you get to the place where you're irresistible. And of course, many of us have been in those situations in dating where you just can't stop thinking about the person and you're constantly texting them. And that's what you want to be when you're interviewing for a job or pitching someone to hire you if you're selling something, because you want to have, we've got to get that person to work here. We whatever it costs, you know, the ideal of how much the product costs or how much their salary is, you've gotten them so intensely wanting it has to be you because you've distinguished yourself in a way that allows you to become irresistible.
I love that. And so at what point, how do you speak to the audience? Because what might be irresistible to one person in an interview or sales pitch or on a date might be, it might be irresistible to somebody else, but it might be like, oh my gosh, this person is so off point. Why are they sharing or oversharing this with me, right?
Well, that's whoever asks the best questions customizes their presentation or interview the best. And then whoever tells the best story is more likely going to get the sale or get the job offer. So part of becoming irresistible is telling a story or painting a picture, if you will, of how great life could be if you were to get this job, what you would do for that company or that boss.
So can you give me an example of that? Because we hear it so often. You know, I've been in recruiting for 15 years, and you've heard every sort of pitch or sales story you can imagine. Well, by gosh, John, I am the best person for the job, and I know I am, and I'm better than Jim, Sue, and Bobby out there. You just got to hire me, and that just lands flat every time. So how do you then make something that you're saying really give it that catch and be irresistible?
Well, one example is almost all interviews. I'm sure you have done this many times yourself. After you've asked the potential employee if, you know, all the questions you have about their background and what they're looking for, then you sometimes will say, usually, well, do you have any questions for me? And unfortunately, I've seen some millennials say, yeah, well, when's vacation start? How many days off do I get right away? And what's the benefit? And I've worked with people and I said, you know, the question that's going to make you really stand out is, what would it look like if I were to exceed your expectations in this job? That one question is going to set you apart from everybody else, because already the person's thinking, oh, this person's coming in already imagining going above and beyond and trying to achieve that. They're not just going to do the minimum of what some of the job requirements. So that says a lot about you without you having to brag.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because it is such a fine line where you get some people who are boastful or loquacious and spend too much time talking about themselves, and then you see the interviewer or the date's eyes glaze over, and then you get the person on the flip side who's observing and analyzing and not giving enough information. So it really is striking that fine balance.
It's a conversation, and that's why, you know, Plato said storytellers rule the world. So if you can paint a picture and tell a story of what you had a challenge in another job and how you overcame that challenge, then people start to lean in and listen and say, well, how did you overcome that problem? And gosh, that's the kind of problem solving, critical thinking we want to have here. So it's very different if you tell a story about a situation versus just saying, I'm a critical thinker.
I love it. It's such a good point. In fact, it's funny you say that, because there was a story that somebody recently told me about 2 months ago. A common question we ask job seekers in an interview is, tell me about a difficult or demanding person or situation and how you handled it. And I have heard everything under the sun. Oh, God, Bob was such a jerk and he yelled and screamed, or my coworker did this or that. And you often hear people just focusing and expounding upon the problem. What this woman did, she said, you know what, Jennifer? One day, I walked into an interview. It was for a CEO of a major corporation. And when I sat down in front of that CEO, he looked at me and very abruptly said, "I'm going to yell at you. How are you going to handle it?" And she kind of gave a little giggle and she said, "Well, sir, how I'm going to handle it is the first time you yell at me, I'm going to look at you. I'm going to stand up. I'm going to walk out of your office. I'm going to walk down the hallway and then I'm going to return, sit back down and allow you to finish yelling at me." And the guy looked at her and was so baffled and he said, "Fine, whatever, you're hired." So sure enough, about 2 weeks later, she starts, and about 2 to 3 weeks into the job, what happens? He begins to yell at her, and she did exactly what she said. She stood up, she walked out of his office, down the hallway, returned, sat back down, and the man started giggling, and they had this amazing relationship. And to this day, that is one of the most brilliant stories I've ever even heard. I've been stealing her story and using it because it's such a good story, right?
But well, what makes it a great story is it allows the boss to cool off without telling him to cool off. So she has the high emotional intelligence to take a beat and walk out without having to explain it and then return. Most people would be too afraid to return. So there's a lot of reasons why that's such a great story.
Yeah. And so have you noticed in your experience of storytelling, are there elements that are necessary to make a story great?
Yes. Exposition is the first part. The who, what, where, when. Paint that picture. So you did a great job of that. You know, this is a woman interviewing for a job. Stakes are high. The problem is, he said, "I'm going to yell at you. How are you going to handle it?" She instantly had a solution. The resolution is she got hired. He did it. And they became great friends and great working relationship from that. So he was able to let off steam without her taking it personally. So those are the elements of what makes that a good story. So if you have those four things in a story, you can be sure that you're checking off all the boxes that are going to make it memorable and compelling.
And so it sounds like I've noticed a lot of people might miss one of the elements and you can't quite put your finger on it. You really want to like what somebody's telling you and you just kind of, you leave it just feeling off put almost.
Yes. Well, the biggest one I see that people forget, Jennifer, is the last one, the resolution. Maybe they'll paint a great picture. You know, when I was 10 years old, this happened to me, and then I figured out how to ride my bike. And you're like, what's the point of that story? What's the resolution? Who cares? So you must have some kind of resolution. What's life like for you or the person you helped after the problem's been solved?
Yeah, and I think that's great because I think if you take just these fluffy adjectives that people use in an interview, I'm diligent, I'm a quick learner, whatever these fluffy things are that are used to describe it, but then you follow that up with what I call PEP, P-E-P, productivity, efficiency, or performance, and you illustrate a time where you increase productivity, efficiency, or performance, that kind of leads into what you're saying, whether it's a sales pitch, a date, or an interview, that gives you an opportunity then to create a framework for the story, is my experience.
Well, it's much like a sales presentation. You tell a case study of someone else, another client that you helped. What I do is I help people tell those stories in a way that's not so dry with statistics and numbers. You know, when you get into performance metrics and, you know, I did this and then that happened, you know, but if you tell a story and structure it in a way that there's a little bit of drama, for example, I was working with an architecture firm. They were bidding to get a new airport renovation. And they were talking about another airport situation where they had to take up all the tiles in the middle of the night and lay down cabling and get them all put back so that the retail stores could open up on time and not lose any revenue. Well, that's fairly interesting, but the drama of it is there was a problem and one of the electricity things blew and they had to call in people in the middle of the night to fix it. And, you know, the last tile was being laid down at, you know, at 7:59, right before the stores were to open at 8 o'clock so that they could make that deadline, showing that they have the resources and the skill set to make their promises come true. So adding that little bit of drama to your story brings it to life in a way that's much more memorable and compelling.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's great. It's just all about, I almost hear what you're saying. Like in the beginning of that story, you're like, okay, so they landed this dealer. So this happened and they put the tiles in overnight. But the minute you actually get into, as you said, the who, what, when, where, how, you actually buy into the story. It's kind of like a good movie, a good book, a good play. Yes. If you don't have all of those elements, you and I were just talking about great movies before we hopped on the show. And there are, I would argue that the same thing in storytelling is obviously true of movies. And that's what makes them so memorable that yes. people are talking about it the week following seeing the movie, you know?
Exactly. And of course, you want to have something that makes you memorable when you're interviewing. You need to tell a story, because if it's just, you know, candidate after candidate after candidate, it all blurs together. Same thing when you're selling advertising or you're an architecture firm. You know, they look at vendor after vendor. And if you don't have, whoever tells the best story is the one that they're going to hire, they're going to remember. Like, I want to hire that person that survived that, you know, midnight crisis. They're going to work that hard for me.
Yeah, kind of. It goes back to that. What is that? The Dos Equis guy. I don't often drink beer, but when I do, I drink Dos Equis. You know, if you can be that guy or that girl and just have that mm-hmm. certain je ne sais quoi or that certain something that has people talk about you once you've left the room in a good way, not in a bad way, because I think the reverse can be said as well. But you have to, you know, kind of know what you're putting out there.
Yes. And that goes back to thinking of yourself as a brand going to work for another brand. And the more you do that, you're empowered to say, here's what I stand for as a brand. I have integrity, I have passion and joy. And if everybody else that I decide to work with has those same branding characteristics, it's going to be a great fit. If this is the kind of place where we don't keep our word to the clients and people hate working here, that's not a fit for me as a brand. And so when you're interviewing, you're an equal. You're not someone holding their hand out going, oh, please hire me. You're like, no. What do you stand for? Here's what I stand for. Let's see if there's a fit. It's a very different frame control.
And I can see that. It's funny, too, if you approach that or you apply it to dating or to sales or whatever that might look like, I think that mm-hmm. there's something to be said about communicating your needs. I feel like we so often, I was just talking to a job seeker about an hour ago before we hopped onto the show, and the job seeker was telling me, oh, gosh, you know, Jen, my group of attorneys have left and I'm really worried and I'm starting to, you know, think I just need to put myself out there. And whether you're on the opposite side of a dinner table at a date, an interview in an office, or a sales pitch meeting, people sense desperation. And if you go mm-hmm. in just coming from a place of, I need you to want me, it kind of has yeah. this flavor to it that people find disarming, not in a good way of just, gosh, I really want to get away from this person. And I think right. that the more that you know your brand, to your point, I love this concept of set your five core values. What are your five core values? And then maybe come up with stories that illustrate each of those five values mm-hmm. and find ways to weave them throughout the interview, perhaps.
Yes, exactly. I remember once when I was interviewing for a job and I was in the final. It was between me and another candidate. And, you know, I had to interview five different people at the company. And then I got down to the HR and they were like, yeah, everybody seems to really like you, but your salary requirements are too high. And I said, you know, what this reminds me of is when you're looking for a house and you have a certain budget for the house and you want the house to have the pool and you want the house to have the view and you want it to be in a great neighborhood. And usually you have to give up one of those things for your budget. And, you know, what you're asking me to sell here has a premium price. And if I can't convince you and everyone else here to pay a premium price for me, how in the world am I going to convince advertisers to pay a premium price for this? So I'm really the house with the view. I have a big perspective on how to do this. I know the neighborhood. I have contacts in the territory. I can hit the ground running. And, you know, the pool, the luxury of a pool is I have creative thinking and, you know, I've hit my numbers everywhere I've ever been. So that's why I feel like I'm worth what I'm asking for, just like a house is.
That's so important.
It got me the job at Condé Nast. Yeah.
No kidding. And it's so true because we're seeing that a lot in this market because some people might say, oh, salaries are inflated right now. No, salaries mm-hmm. are whatever somebody is willing to pay for somebody with that skill set. In the same way, you're going to, the housing market, it is what it is.
Yes.
However much somebody is willing to pay for that house is how much that house is worth.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. And because now you can find the money from somewhere, even if the loan, you know, bank won't loan against anything higher than that, then people have enough cash to pay what they want to win it.
Yeah, and it's funny too, because I love what I love about your story with Condé Nast is that you had a certain level of value that you knew you brought to the table and a certain level of self-respect. And I think that so many of us are taught at a certain point in our career or in our dating relationships or whatever that might look like, that we're not worth it. Oh, you know, John, you're just asking for too much and people are never going to pay you that. You're just not worth it or the market won't bear it. And it's really a disservice to dishonor and disrespect yourself in that way. And I think that's why we see such wage disparity in the marketplace between some people who are making hundreds of thousands and some people who can't put food on the table. And it's not to say anybody out there who's listening, I've been there. You know, I've had, you know, two or three jobs that I've worked at one time and, you know, and wasn't able to pay the bills and got myself into loads of debt. But then somewhere along the line, you have to draw a line in the sand and know what you're worth. You know, my carpet cleaner, I had a carpet cleaner here the other day. And people always ask me, what do you do, Jen? And I said, well, I help people find their dream jobs. And the carpet cleaner says, well, you can clearly see I'm living mine. And, you know, we were laughing. But and I told him, I was like, you know, I'm here if you ever want to talk. Because sometimes just having one conversation with somebody about understanding the value that you bring. You know, nobody popped you out of your mom's womb and said, one day you're going to work for Condé Nast, do a TED Talk, be an author and a speaker. You, at some point in your life, had to choose those things for yourself and had to overcome whatever obstacles you had to overcome to get there.
Yes. And I think just, you know, I always compare it to Tiffany's versus going downtown in L.A. to the jewelry mart. There's a reason why people are willing to pay a premium price for an engagement ring from Tiffany's, because of the branding and the packaging and all the stuff that goes with the experience of that, versus, you know what, let's just save some money and go downtown to the jewelry mart and get a diamond. And so if you, you know, how, again, it goes back to what's your brand.
Yeah, and just knowing what your brand is. So were there ever any points in your career, you know, as you moved up and you left Condé Nast to become a speaker, where you doubted yourself and you doubted your value? Or what about you? How did you get here?
I think, well, even when I was at Condé Nast, I always had a little bit of a fear that someone was going to tap me on the shoulder and go, oh, I'm sorry, there's been a mistake. You don't know what you're doing. You're out of here.
Right.
That imposter syndrome. You know, I remember being so excited when Coca-Cola invited me to speak at their CMO summit. And then I started looking at all the other speakers that were speaking that day, Harvard, New York Times bestseller. And I started, you know, my head started spinning. I started comparing myself, which is the kiss of death to anything. And I just said, well, I have to trust that the vice president, who's been doing this for many years, saw something in my reel that she didn't see somewhere else. And then I put myself in the audience's shoes, and I said, do I really care where somebody went to school or how many books they sold? Not really. I care about how they make me think or feel or, you know learn something. That's what's important to me. And, you know, so I had to talk myself off the ledge a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that's so important, is just getting it out of our own heads, because, you know, no matter where you are, you know, you might be making $10 an hour somewhere in the world, or you might be making $100,000. And we all have greater value in ourselves, but it's the moment that we start to compare ourselves and we say, oh, well, there has to be somebody smarter, prettier, more intelligent, more effective than me out there. When we compare ourselves to others, we're giving our power away and we're not respecting ourselves. We're actually disrespecting and dishonoring ourselves and what we find valuable. The same is true in dating. Sometimes when we date people, you know, we might go through and we might date somebody who's not, you know, maybe it's an abusive relationship, or maybe the person's disrespectful, or you settle for less. And it comes down to, what are your core values and who do you respect? The same is true of a crappy job. We stay in crappy jobs because we don't respect ourselves or our value enough, or know what our core values are.
Well, I think also really connected to that is a fear of rejection. You know, if I put myself out there in an interview and I don't get it, I'll feel bad. Or if I ask for a raise and I don't get it, I'll feel bad. Or if I, all that fear of rejection can paralyze us. And in sales, you get rejected a lot. So I was determined to figure out how to handle that. And for me, you know, because when I would ask somebody, you want to advertise with me, and they said, no, we're going with another magazine. And I think, oh man, somebody else could have gotten a yes. Or maybe they're right. Maybe that other magazine's better than the one I'm representing. And then I'm like, wait a minute. I'm rejecting myself and what I'm selling. That's what's causing the pain. I'm agreeing with their no, So it may be though for now, or maybe because we're not a good fit, it doesn't mean that who I am or what I'm selling doesn't work for other people. So the minute I realized that I never reject myself and not take the rejection so personally, I was free to not fear it.
I love that. All right. So I would love it if you could say that again, John, because there was just so much in what you just said about not rejecting yourself. I feel like you're speaking right to my heart right now. It's so true. I think it's a great lesson we can all learn.
Well, the secret to handling rejection, whether it's a date you went on that you get sad that you didn't get a second date, a job interview you went on you didn't get hired for, or a sales presentation you went on that you didn't get the sale, the secret to handling rejection is to never take it personally by never rejecting yourself. So regardless of what the outcome is, you say, I still have value, my product has value, whatever it is, you know, I'm still going to be a great date for the right person. And that person just wasn't a fit. And that doesn't mean I have to start agreeing with that no.
I love that. I think I'm going to have to meme that after the show and quote you as having said that, because that's such a funny thing. No, but you know, sometimes you hear stuff, and for me, it's a very selfish reason that I meme stuff and then I put it onto Instagram, because somebody will say something like what you just said that is so profound and so salient that I just don't want to forget it. I want to be able to go back to my Insta account anytime and just say, wow, what was that brilliant thing that John said on the show weeks ago, and then share it with other people.
Thanks. Well, you know, I read the book Disrupt You by Jay Stammett, and he said, you know, don't fear failure either. You know, there's rejection, and then there's a whole separate level of, I'm afraid of failing at something new. And he said, failure is just feedback. Keep going until you get a zombie idea so great it won't die. So that's somebody that I always quote, because that helps me look at failure in a completely different way.
I'm going to have to write that one down. And you said that one was called Disrupt You?
Yes, that's the name of Jay Sammet's book.
Perfect. I'm going to write that one down. So tell our listeners a little bit about how it was you wound up getting a TED Talk. I mean, and not just any TED Talk. I think you have over 1 million views on it, right?
Well, there's a story of deciding that I wanted to do something and being willing to take the rejection, because I applied for over 1.5 years to many different locations. There's TEDx talks in many different cities. And again, they kept saying, it doesn't mean you're not good. It doesn't mean your idea is not worth sharing. It's just, it doesn't fit into our overall theme for the day. And you have to realize that what your topic is has to be part of relevant to what they're doing. In the case of my TEDx is called Be the Lifeguard of Your Own Life. You know, unlike in a hurricane, no one's going to come rescue you. And so that concept of how do we do that, and how, in my case, getting laid off from Condé Nast and having to reinvent myself emotionally is what my whole intent was. So it was under the umbrella of TEDx in Wilmington, Delaware, of the age of amazement and how can we amaze ourselves with resilience. So that was the fit. But I didn't give up. And even when I would, you know, sometimes I get, we had 1,000 applications, and we're down to 50, and we're going to pick 20. You're in that, you know, almost, but I'll still know. So it was, I had to walk my own talk of continuing to apply and tweaking and hiring a speech coach that specialized in TEDx talks to make sure I was as laser focused as possible. And then the day of, I bought a new suit and I hired someone to do my slides that were animated. And we'd had a rehearsal the night before, and I flew myself there on my own dime. And then I spent money promoting it, running ads on Facebook. You know, here's 5 things that you can do to if you're a perfectionist, and here's 5 ways to overcome the fear of rejection. And because that's part of the talk. So if anybody was resonating with those things, they would click and watch the talk. So it's all about, you know, not giving up, doing it, and then having a strategy and a plan to make what you've done successful.
Yeah, I think that's such great advice. And I think, wasn't it Mark Lovett? Is that who your TED coach was?
Yes.
I love Mark. We're having Mark on the show in a couple of weeks on November 5th to talk about, you know, say somebody out there has ambitions to get on TED. He seems like a very good resource for that.
Oh, he's great. And I met him through our mutual friend, Dr. Mark Goldston. So that also shows your listeners, don't be afraid to tell people what your dreams are, even if they seem so huge. Like, I want to give a TEDx talk. And Mark Goldston said, oh, then you need to talk to Mark Lovett. He runs the San Diego one. So I was like, oh, you know, So had I not said that, I would never have met Mark and been able to get that to happen.
And it's so funny you say that, because I was just thinking, and Mark introduced me to you and then to Mark. And the funny thing about that was I was sitting at a conference in February of this year, and the keynote speaker at that conference referenced Mark Goldston's book and said, it's the best book you'll ever read on listening. And I just on a whim reached out, I Googled Mark Goldston, found his contact info, and I said, you know, sir, you just were referenced as the best guy in the world on listening. Any chance you would ever like to be a guest on my show? And since then, Mark has become a friend and a mentor. And it's just so amazing. Yes. Where if, and I could have very easily been rejected, and I have been rejected before, but it's about not taking it personally, to your point, and still persevering and not being afraid of hearing no.
Yes. And also customizing and personalizing your reach out. You did it in a very flattering, authentic way. It wasn't just like, hey, I read your book, let's be friends.
Yeah, and that's what it's about, too, is putting thought into it. I think we sometimes all try the shotgun approach because you want that date or you want that job. And it's actually very apropos for the job hunting world, because people put their resumes out there and there's nothing personal about it. It's just they shotgun it out to everybody in town. They sometimes have the wrong objective on there or a completely divergent job description from the one they're applying for. And it really hurts people because they wind up getting blacklisted in the industry for having an inconsistent resume. There was a gentleman actually today who came highly referred to me, and his resume we had on file was inconsistent with the one he sent. And I said, listen, you know, I would love to be able to help you, but, you know, if you're sending out inconsistent versions, we're not going to be the best resource for you because it hurts your brand as much as it hurts my brand. And I can't align myself with people who don't have integrity in what's on their resume.
Well, it goes back to what we were saying earlier. You must think of yourself as a brand. You can't. Coca-Cola doesn't change their colors every 5 minutes. People know it's red. The Golden Arches at McDonald's are yellow, right? It's consistent.
Yeah, and it's so important, though, but how many of us actually take the time to ask that question in an interview, in a date, in a sales pitch? I don't know about you, but I've had to turn down clients before, because if I find out that a client is out of integrity with the values that we hold as an organization or that I personally hold, the thing that's the right thing to do, as painful as it might be or that you might lose money over it, is the fact just to politely decline and say, I'm so sorry, we're not going to be the best resource for you, even if it means that you might lose face or lose money.
Well, that's why the clients are hiring you, for your screening abilities and putting their needs ahead of just making money. And it also speaks to your mindset of abundance versus scarcity, because even if you don't know who's going to replace that potential new client that you turned down for whatever reason, you have to have faith and trust in your own abilities that the right client will come along.
I think that's a great point, John, is that it does come down to having an abundant mindset. You know, when people say, how do you make money? How are you successful? How does that happen? I tell everybody, give your money away. That's my secret. You know, Bill Gates and Melinda Gates do it better than anybody else out there. I think they give 50 or 60% of Microsoft's proceeds away every year through their philanthropic efforts. And yet every single year, year on year end, they make more money than they did the year before. And I think whether it's a job or a date or, you know, going after that sales pitch, if we come from it of a place of there's not enough and, you know, I'm not going to be able to find the right guy or gal or the right job because there's only a limited amount, you will absolutely prove yourself right in the same way that you can prove yourself right that the perfect job, guy, gal, sales pitch client is going to show up with the right mental attitude.
Einstein once said that the biggest decision any of us ever make is whether we think we live in a friendly, safe universe or not.
Ah, I love that. I think Mark had just told me that quote too. And it's sad because so many of us at some point in our lives decide that the world is not safe and that people are not trusting. And then we go through life bumping into people in situations saying not safe, not safe, not trustworthy. And
well,
we can't figure out
looking for validation of our premise. We're like,
totally.
Here's what I believe. Let me go find evidence to support that. Either way.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a scary prospect when you look at where are you coming from? And that goes back to your core values. I think it's a worthwhile endeavor for us all to play around with, is to look at what really matters to us. And what if we went out into the world and we shared that with people, even despite the possible rejection? So I think it just might be a fun thing to play around with. But I could talk to you all day, John. I mean, you tell me, are there any good points or anything I didn't get a chance to ask you that you think might be valuable to anybody tuning in, or that, you know, you'd love to recap or highlight for people?
I think the big key takeaway I would love for people to realize is that when you become a storyteller, you become magnetic to your ideal clients, potential employers, whoever you're trying to attract. And it's the difference between pushing, which is the old way of selling, pushing out a message, versus storytelling allows you to pull people in. And so if you just shift your mindset from being a salesperson that pushes to a storyteller who pulls people in with great stories, you'll prevent burnout and you won't be dealing with being seen as a commodity where your only difference is price.
I think that's great. So it's about having the pulling and drawing people in, like, to go back to your first point about being irresistible. I think that's the definition of somebody who's irresistible, draws people in and has that certain something that people just want to fall in love with.
Yes, indeed. In fact, I have a free gift for your listeners. If they text the word pitch, P-I-T-C-H, to 66866, I will email them my free book, Getting to Yes from Invisible to Irresistible. So all I have to do is text the word pitch, P-I-T-C-H, to 66866, and they'll get all the descriptions of the different rungs of the ladder of invisible to irresistible.
I love that. As one of my guests last year taught me to say, how does it get any better than this? You know, got to fill the void with good stuff. Well, in case people also want to reach out to you or might want to hire you for a speaking engagement, where else can people find information about you online?
The easiest is just my name, John Livesay, L-I-V-S and Victor, E-S-A-Y.com. And if you can't remember that, you can just Google The Pitch Whisperer and all the content I've done around that will come right up.
And also, of course, check out your amazing TED Talk, that How to Be the Lifeguard of Your Own Life, right?
Yes.
Perfect. Well, John, it's been a pleasure to have you on today. And I'm intending that our listeners got as much value out of this as I did, because I know there were a lot of great takeaways. And I would definitely plan to meme that quote and share it with everybody later. So if you missed any portion of today's show, do remember that you can go to the latalkradio.com website on the Get Yourself the Job page. And at the bottom of the page, you'll find an archive of all of our prior shows, including today's episode, available for your download. Or if you're more of an iTunes fan, you can also hop on iTunes and go to Get Yourself the Job on iTunes and find and download or subscribe and listen at your leisure to any of our prior shows on there as well. So thank you again to John for joining us, to our sponsors over at Markham Search, and to wishing everybody a wonderful rest of your week out there.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.